Chapter 59. The Royal Geographical Society Islands appeared as a mass of buff-colored hills rising above the choppy slate waters. The islands were christened by explorer Roald Amundsen in 1905, during his epic voyage on the Jo, when he became the first man to successfully navigate the length of the Northwest Passage. Remote and forgotten for over a century, the islands remained a footnote until a freelance exploration company found an exposed deposit of zinc on West Island and sold its claims to Mid-America. The Mid-America mining camp was built on a wide cove along the island's rugged southern coast, which zigzagged with numerous inlets and lagoons. A naturally formed deep-water channel allowed large ships to access the cove, providing that the sea ice had vanished for the season. The company had built a 300-foot semi-floating dock that stretched from the cove, sitting empty and alone amid the chunks of ice bobbing in the surrounding waters. Zack had the captain pull to the dock while he scanned the shoreline through a pair of binoculars. He viewed a pair of prefabricated buildings perched beneath a small bluff alongside a gravel road that ran inland a short distance. The windows of the buildings were dark, and piles of drifting snow could be seen accumulated in the doorways. Satisfied that the facility was still abandoned from the winter shutdown, he had the Otok tie up to the dock. "Have the team of geologists assembled and put ashore," Zack instructed the captain. "I want to know the mineral content of the ore they are extracting here, as well as the geology of the general area."
"I believe the team is anxious to get ashore," the captain quipped, having seen a number of the geologists suffering from seasickness in the galley.
"Captain, I had a large package sent to the ship before I arrived. Did you receive a delivery in Tuktoyaktuk?"
"Yes, a crate was taken aboard there. I had it placed in the forward hold."
"Please have it delivered to my cabin. It contains some materials that I'll need on shore," he said.
"I'll have it taken care of right away. What about our captives on the barge?"
"They're probably near death," he said, eyeing a digital thermometer on the console that indicated the outside temperature was 5 degrees.
"Ah, yes, our frozen Americans.
I'm sure their disappearance has a few people excited by now," Zack said with an arrogant tone. "Toss them some food and blankets, I suppose. It may still do for us to keep them alive."
While the geologists made their way ashore, accompanied by an armed security team, Zack stepped down to his cabin. His package, a metal-skinned trunk toting a heavy padlock, sat waiting for him on the carpeted floor. Inside was a carefully organized array of fuses and detonators, along with enough dynamite to flatten a city block. Zack selected a few of the items and placed them in a small satchel, then relocked the trunk. Slipping into a heavy parka, he made his way to the main deck and was about to step off the ship when a crewman stopped him.
"You have a call on the bridge. The captain asks that you come right away."
Zack took a companionway to the bridge, where he found the captain talking on a secure satellite telephone.
"Yes, he's right here," the captain said, then turned and handed the phone to Zack.
The testy voice of Mitchell Goyette blared through the earpiece.
"Zack, the captain tells me that you are tied up at the Mid-America facility."
"That's right. They haven't initiated their summer operations yet, so the place is empty. I was just on my way to make sure they stay out of commission for the season."
"Excellent.
The way things are heating up in Ottawa, I doubt an American would even be able to set foot up there." Goyette's greed began to chime in.
"Try not to destroy any infrastructure that might be useful for me when I purchase the lot at a fire sale price," he said with a snort.
"I'll keep that in mind," Zack replied.
"Tell me, what have you learned about the ruthenium?"
"The geologists are just now making an initial survey around the mining camp, but we're presently on the south side of the island, and the trader's map indicated that the Inuit mine was located on the north coast. We'll reposition there in a few hours."
"Very well. Keep me apprised."
"There is something you should be aware of," Zack replied, dropping the bombshell. "We have the American crew of the Polar Dawn in our captivity."
"You what?" Goyette howled, forcing Zack to pull the receiver away from his ear.
The industrialist's temper burned white hot, even after Zack described the circumstances of the abduction.
"No wonder the politicians are going ballistic," he hissed. "You're about to set off World War III."
"It makes it a sure thing that the Americans won't have access to this region for a long time," Zack argued.
"That may be true, but I won't enjoy profiting from their absence if I'm sitting in a jail cell."
"Dispose of the matter, and without incidents," he barked.
"Whatever you do, there had better be no link to me."
Zack hung up the phone as the line went dead. Just another unimaginative thug who had bullied his way to billions, Zack thought. Then he slipped his parka back on and went ashore.
A brown ring of rock and gravel encircled the island's cove, melding into a white sheet of ice as one moved inland. The exception was a large rectangular rut that ran several hundred feet into the hillside, ending in a flat, vertical wall clearly cut by machine. The zinc mining operation was simply cutting straight into the landscape, where the mineral-rich ore was readily accessible. In the distance, Zack noticed a few of the geologists poking around the tailings of the most recent diggings. The interior of the cove was protected from the worst of the westerly winds, but Zack still moved quickly down the dock, not wishing to prolong his exposure to the cold. He quickly sized up the mining operation before him, which was simple and low-tech. The larger of two buildings was a warehouse that housed the mining equipment, bulldozers, backhoes, and a dump truck that dug up the island's soil and transferred it onto a small conveyor system for shipboard loading. A smaller building next door would be the crew's bunkhouse and administrative office. Zack made his way to the smaller building first, curiously finding that the door had been locked. Pulling a Glock automatic from his pocket, he fired twice at the deadbolt, then kicked the door open. The interior was like an expansive house, with two large bedrooms filled with bunk beds, plus an oversized kitchen, a dining room, and a living area. Zack walked directly to the kitchen and looked at the stove, which trailed a gas line to a storage closet containing a large tank of propane. Digging into his satchel, he removed a charge of dynamite and placed it beneath the tank, then affixed a blasting cap with a timed fuse. Checking his watch, he set the fuse to ignite in 90 minutes, then exited the building. He walked to the equipment storage building, studying its exterior for some time before hiking around to the backside. Towering over the building was a small bluff, which was strewn with ice-covered rocks and boulders. He struggled up the steep slope to a slight ledge that ran horizontally across the upper face of the hill. Kicking a divot in the frozen ground beneath a car-sized boulder, he removed his gloves and placed another charge of dynamite under the rock. With his fingers freezing, he quickly set the fuse to the blasting cap. Moving a few yards away, he set a second charge beneath a similar clump of large boulders. Scampering down the hillside, he returned to the front of the building and set one more charge by the hinge of a large swinging door. Setting the fuse, he quickly stepped back to the dock and headed for the icebreaker. As he approached the ship, he could see the captain peering down at him from the bridge. Zack pumped his arm, motioning for him to blow the ship's horn. A second later, two deafening blasts echoed off the hills, signaling the geologists to return to the ship. Zack turned to see that the geologists took note of the message, then he walked to the barge at the end of the pier. The dock just reached to the bow of the barge, and Zack waited until the current nudged the vessel against the pylons before jumping onto an embedded steel ladder that rose to the vessel's deck. Climbing up, he made his way astern, passing the number 4 hold on the way to an indented well on the aft side. Kneeling against an exterior bulkhead, he packed his remaining explosives, this time affixing a radio-controlled detonator. It wasn't positioned beneath the waterline as he would have liked, but he knew it would do the job in the rolling seas that they had been encountering. Ignoring the lives of the men huddled a few feet away, Zack stepped off the barge with a wry sense of satisfaction. Goyette wasn't going to be happy losing a newly built barge, but what could he say? Zack's instructions were to leave no evidence, and disposing of the barge where nobody could find it was the perfect solution.
The last of the geologists and security guards were climbing aboard the icebreaker when Zack reached the gangplank. He headed straight to the bridge, thankful to enter its warm interior.
"Everyone is back aboard," the captain reported. "Are you ready to leave, or did you wish to speak to the geologists first?"
"They can brief me on the way. I'm anxious to investigate the North Shore." He looked at his watch. "Though we might want to enjoy the show before shoving off."
2 minutes later, the bunkhouse kitchen blew up, leveling the walls of the entire structure. The propane tank, which was nearly full of gas, exploded in a massive fireball that sent waves of orange flame skyward, its concussion rattling the windows on the ship. A few seconds later, the storage building charge went off, blowing off the front door and crumbling the roof. The hillside charges were next, creating a tumbling landslide of rocks and boulders that poured onto the mangled roof. When a thick cloud of airborne dust finally settled, Zack could see that the entire building was pulverized under a layer of rock and rubble.
"Very effective," mumbled the captain. "I guess we don't need to worry about an American presence in the vicinity now."
"Quite," Zack replied, in a tone of arrogant certainty.